is National Radon Awareness Month. And we've got David Metzger on with us from First Option Radon Measurement. How are you, David?
I'm great. How are you today?
So far, so good.
I mean, can tell.
I'm inside, so I'm warm, so I'm okay. If I'm outside, I'm probably going to be miserable, but that's okay. I picked an indoor profession, thankfully, so this is okay for me. Well, for those that don't know exactly, what is radon and what kinds of dangers can it present?
Okay. Well, radon is a naturally occurring radioactive gas. It actually is formed by the degrading of uranium, which happens to be in our soil beneath us, underneath our homes, underneath our buildings, underneath our schools. And as the uranium degrades, one of the things that it turns into is radium. All of those things are solids. But then when the radium degrades, it turns into a gas called radon gas. And that gas, of course, is lighter than the soil, so it's trying to get up into the atmosphere. It works its way up through the soil. Then it gets trapped underneath our homes, works its way in the cracks and crevices of our homes, where because it can't just dissipate into the atmosphere, it gets trapped in the home and builds to oftentimes higher levels than we would like to have. It's unfortunately the second leading cause of lung cancer. There are about 21,000 people a year in the United States that die from radon-induced lung cancer. And so it's not an insignificant kind of a thing. The good news is it's an easy thing to fix. But anyway, that's basically what radon is.
Okay, well, let's stick with the fixing method here, too. I guess, how is fixing elevated levels in homes accomplished, and how should you test to see what kinds of radon levels you've got in your home?
Okay, really good questions. Testing is kind of a tough thing because, unlike most chemicals, most atoms that we have, if you think in terms of the structure of the atom of radon, its outer layer of electrons is completely full, so it doesn't easily mix with other chemicals. So we can't just sit like we would carbon monoxide. Okay, if we have carbon monoxide and we mix another chemical with it, we end up with a third chemical. The radon won't mix like that. So we have to have some specialized equipment to test. And it's possible to get some test kits at local grocery store or local hardware stores. Lowe's, Home Depot has them. Ace Hardware has those kinds of kits. They're not necessarily the best kit in the world. There are a number of professional radon people around the area. Anybody that is a member of the Ohio Association of Radon Professionals can help. A lot of home inspectors do radon testing. And there's five or six different methodologies which some of them use in getting that testing done. But that's the best way to do it, is to have it professionally tested. Now we find out we have high levels of radon, and we'll talk about what that is in a few minutes. What do we have to do to fix it? And I'm going to oversimplify this. It's not quite as simple as it sounds, but we basically drill a hole below the foundation of the house, put a pipe in that hole, run that pipe outside and put a fan in it and suck all the soil gases out from underneath the house before they have a chance to get into the house. There's a whole lot more that goes into it than just the idea of putting a straw in a box underneath your house. But that's basically the system that is most commonly used. There's some other systems that we use to augment it, and there's some other things when that doesn't work as well as we would like that we can do to kind of improve the functioning of the mitigation system, but that's basically it.
David, you mentioned it comes from uranium or starts from the uranium aspect.
Right.
Are there some areas? I mean, is Cleveland more prone to it than probably other areas?
Well, you know, we here in Northeast Ohio are in a little bit of a different situation than a lot of people in the country are. Interestingly, there is no state in the United States that does not have some areas of high levels of radon.
Mm-hmm.
And the EPA has a map with which they have, it's kind of a geological map more than it is an actual map from real numbers of what radon levels are. But it's kind of a predictive sort of map that they have created. And they divided everything up into level one, level two, level three. Level one means you've got a pretty good likelihood of having 4.0 picocuries or higher, which is the EPA's action level, if you will. Level two is 2 to 4. And level three is generally we only have 1 or 2 picocuries. And it's generally considered that if we have those lower levels between 1 and 2, it's probably not so bad. Although most scientists agree that there is no low level of ionizing radiation that is good for us. Basically what happens is that as that radiation degrades, as that radioactive degrading process happens, alpha particles and beta particles are released. And the way they get released can do serious damage to our lung tissue if it happens to be in our lungs when it's happening. So that's kind of where that goes. And I dropped the first part of your question.
Well, I just wondered if there were more areas. For some reason, I know Canada is one of the top producers of uranium, so I wondered if there were
okay.
more areas that were more susceptible.
Well, yeah, and there are some areas here. Actually, I've got an associate in the Pennsylvania area who is currently working on a housing development that was built on a uranium mine filing dump.
Okay.
And and they have homes that have literally thousands of picocuries in the homes, which they're able to mitigate down to below four, which tells us, okay, if we have high levels of radon, we can fix it. It's not that big of a deal, and it's not terribly expensive to do it. But I know where I was with your question. You asked about why is this area sometimes more mm-hmm. than others? And part of the reason is, yes, there is a fair share of uranium in the soil beneath us. Secondly, the Great Lakes were carved out by the glaciers that took all of the soil that was there and dropped it right where we are now. So not only do we have the uranium we used to have, but we also have the uranium that used to be in the surface area that is now the Great Lakes. So, we kind of get a double dose of it here. Some areas are more prone than others. Most of the homes that I've tested in Vermilion, for example, are high levels of radon. And part of that is because there's so much shale in the soil beneath.
Okay.
Shale is someplace between 12 to 20 times more likely to have uranium in it than normal soil is. Never mind the fact that you got all those cracks and crevices between the layers of shale, which make it so easy for the gas to get up. So that's part of the problem.
Makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
Sure.
Again, it's National Radon Awareness Month. David Metzger with First Option Radon Measurement is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt had asked you a question about, geographically, where you're located, does that make a difference? How about the age of your house, when your house was built? Does that make a difference?
Actually, it does not. To some degree, some older homes have a lot more natural ventilation, I'm going to say. They're not as tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some cases, that you can't really just make a overall, over the whole course of everything rule. But in some cases, those older homes that have more ventilation, if you will, don't have as much high levels because the radon gas is able to dissipate. Newer, tighter homes oftentimes do have more. I've tested plenty of brand spanking new homes that people haven't even moved into yet that have exceedingly high levels of radon. So it doesn't have really anything to do with the age of the home. It has more to do with three things. How much uranium is in the soil beneath the home, what the porosity of the soil is, and how are the pathways to get into your house once it gets up underneath your home.
How often should you have your home checked? I'm just curious.
Well, it depends on exactly what your situation is. The EPA recommends that if you have had high levels and you have a radon mitigation system, you have your home checked every 2 years.
Okay.
And they say if you have had levels below 2 picocuries, then you can probably wait every 5 or 6 years to test. And then, the EPA's action level is 4.0 picocuries. But then they also have a recommendation that says you should consider fixing anything between 2 and 4 because nobody does know if that level is going to be okay for you. And a lot of it has to do with your genetics, and there are some, there are some potential other characteristics, some potential other illnesses. The American Cancer Society came out last January, with a paper that showed a tremendous amount of corollary evidence that indicated that blood cancer in women is much more prevalent in areas where there are high levels of radon.
Wow.
We don't have any good scientific evidence to prove that. Then I could go on with a number of other illnesses that we don't have. We got good corollary evidence to say, okay, there's some links here, but we don't have. Nobody's willing to spend the couple million bucks that it's going to take to do the real honest to God scientific research to find out if, Parkinson's or childhood leukemia or any of those kinds of things are enhanced by radon gas.
What about radon and water? Can radon get into water? Does that become a problem?
Actually, it can in many cases. Around here, we really don't have a big deal with radon in water. And radon is not really a problem in water except for private wells. In some local community water systems that actually use well water, they have some requirements to take care of that problem for their customers. but it's private well issues that could become a problem. And I have seen a couple of instances here in Northeast Ohio that have had some of that problem. It's much more common on the East Coast than it is here. Basically, the problem with radon in water isn't in our digestive tract, because our digestive tract is pretty strong, mm-hmm. and our digestive tract can deal with that radon degrading, with that kind of activity that's happening. Our lung tissue is so much more tender that it can more easily be damaged. So the point with water is, if we have a tremendous amount of radon in the water, it's not so much what we're ingesting as it is what it contributes to the air. Because when you run the shower, when you run the washer, when you're washing your hands, then the radon goes into the air from the well water.
Okay. No, that makes perfect sense. Very well explained. Now, what kinds of factors should you be looking for at your home on deciding whether or not you should mitigate?
Well, the only way to really know is to test. Because there's nothing that we can't see it, we can't smell it, we can't taste it. You know, it's that sort of secret killer. And so without actually doing a radon test, we don't really know. And the EPA also recommends that you don't make a mitigation decision just based on one short-term test. So if you would go to Lowe's or Home Depot or Ace Hardware and get one of those kits and try it out yourself, and you find out, gee, I've got 6 picocuries, I have to fix my house, let that be a note for you to say, okay, I'm going to call a radon professional and find out what the number really is. Mm-hmm. Because I have had numerous occasions where somebody has said, oh, yeah, I tested 20 picocuries with the kit that I got at Lowe's, and I go in there and test their house, and it's 3 picocuries.
Wow.
You know, and there have been times when they've said, oh, no, I don't have to worry about it. You know, I tested this house, and it was, 2 picocuries a year ago, and I test their home, and it's 14 picocuries. And the other piece about it is there's a tremendous fluctuation in all natural radiation. So you can't necessarily say, okay, I'm just going to do a sample right now and find out what it is. A short-term test is a minimum of testing for at least 2 days. And actually, the definition of a short-term test is a test for 2 days to 90 days. So it's not, we don't consider it a long-term test until you've tested for 3 months, which gets you into a point of where you've got 2 different heating systems. Your home is functioning under 2 different sort of sets of circumstances. So we're able to really kind of pin down what a natural annual average really might be.
Well, David, before we let you go here, where can our listeners go to get more information on this and to find out what they should do if they feel like maybe they should have to test or mitigate?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me just go ahead and throw out my website, which is First Option Radon. That's the number one ST. OptionRadon.com. And there's a bunch of information on there. If you go to the Ohio Department of Health website and do Ohio Department of Health /radon, you'll get a bunch of information there. The EPA /radon has a tremendous amount of information on it. And so those are some really, really good sources that you can get information on. Also, the Kansas State University runs the EPA's awareness program, and you can do sosradon.com and find out information that's going on from the University of Kansas. Cool. So there you go.
Good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff. Well, David, thank you for coming in studio. This was a lot of fun. It was very interesting to learn more about radon and what kinds of problems it can cause and what we can do in order to try and prevent that from doing some damage in our homes. Thanks for coming in studio.
You bet. And I thank you for having me come in. And the message that I want to create is look at your home, test your home. If you got a problem, fix your home. It's not very expensive to do either one. Thank you very much.